welcome into the Pro Football Weekly podcast. Appreciate you being with us again this week as we get ready to take a look at the Week 11 slate. I am your host, Arthur Arkus, your co-host alongside Eric Edholm. Eric, what is happening?
Everything's good, man. It's, you know, we're getting close to Thanksgiving.
Yeah.
It always sneaks up on me every year, and I think, wow, Thanksgiving is that close, but here we are.
And we were just discussing the Thanksgiving slate next week is okay. It'll be an interesting NFC North game early on, and then two, we got Cowboys Chargers in the middle and Washington, New York late. So whatever. It's always great to be watching football on Thanksgiving with the family and a full belly and all that good stuff. But we've got time to talk about that on next week's podcast. A quick reminder to head to iTunes and make sure you subscribe to the Pro Football Weekly podcast. Leave us a rating and a review while you're there. And a couple quick shout outs to our sponsor, Loot Crate. Check out lootcrate.com for the best surprise you know is coming. And big thanks to our producer, Dan Mott. And of course, to our listeners, thanks again for being with us this week. And Eric, we can finally just at least briefly hit on the Zeke Elliott saga because it's no longer a fluid situation. We don't have to risk saying something that's not going to hold up on our podcast a couple hours later. The NFLPA and Zeke Elliott have given up their fight. They have withdrawn their lawsuit. Zeke is going to take the L, if you will, and take these next five games suspension. Of course, he served the first one on Sunday. And you wrote the story at ProFootballWeekly.com. Just, I guess, your general takeaway is they're surprised with the timing, with the way that this ultimately was resolved.
Yeah, I mean, obviously, I think there's always going to be a little surprise with it. But they, especially with it being a couple weeks away from where they could have had a positive ruling for the hearing, the appeal of the stay and all that stuff, whatever. December 1st could have been a good news situation for them. But I think either they were feeling the heat that this thing may not go our way, and 98% of these collectively bargained situations are always going to go towards, you know, the power, in this case Roger Goodell, that he was granted by the union who signed off on this deal. So, long story short, I think they didn't feel too good about December 1st. And I think big picture, they just said, even if we were to get a positive result, it's possible this thing could have lingered into the offseason. And I don't know, my question back to you would be, you know, does Ezekiel Elliott still have that stigma to follow him? Does this help the Cowboys in that he's coming back for the final two games? Is this thing going to be behind us, or there's still some lasting kind of ramifications from it all?
Yeah, I think unfortunately for Zeke's case, there is going to be a stigma that sticks with him a little bit. You know, his lawyers were very clear to say there's no admission of wrongdoing in us dropping this case. But as I know some others have pointed out in the media, and I think it is kind of fair, if you're wrongly accused of domestic violence, maybe you're going to not stop at any end until you feel like your name has been cleared.
Yep.
Zeke didn't do that. And we're not saying he is guilty or innocent or anything like that, but
perception.
We're just saying there's a stigma.
Yep.
Exactly. And that's probably going to stick to him. And of course, it's now up to Zeke to make sure he doesn't get back in the news for any of the wrong reasons for the rest of his career, which we all hope is going to be a long and prosperous one, because he's good for the league when he's on the field.
Yep.
He's good for the Cowboys when he's on the field. The NFLPA, though, in its statement officially withdrawing its lawsuit, made sure there were a couple parting shots for the NFL, called it a sham and a lie, the disciplinary process that, oh yeah, the NFLPA collectively bargained and gave this power to the NFL, but it just was more foreshadowing of how ugly things are going to get here in a couple years when there's another work stoppage that feels almost imminent.
Yeah, and they could do all the ankle biting they want, and again, I like a lot of people who work over there, and I think they're good-natured as they may be. I mean, look, that, as you pointed out, this is partially their own doing here. They didn't fight for the right things. Okay, great. They got their players some time off in May and June for mini camps and OTAs and things like that, mandatory time in the offseason to spend with their family. That's outstanding. They still make a good deal of money. However, they didn't take full advantage of the financial package that was coming their way, that could have come their way. And, oh, by the way, Article 46, you know, the monster that keeps taking its star players out like Tom Brady and Ezekiel Elliott, the power that was granted to Roger Goodell to be the overlord in these situations. So those are the two biggest things that face them. And then just to maybe put a bow on it, Jerry Jones has, and we could go probably a whole show on this, but you know, it was believed that he fought Goodell and his contract and his status as the commissioner explicitly because of what happened to Zeke. He felt like this was an overreach of his power. I mean, how the union can use that going forward, I don't know. But there's also now this serious back blow to Jones, who just watched his star running back take a knee, you know, and not take a knee like Anthem, but I mean, take right. a knee like I'm punting on this whole thing. So
yep.
this has gone in several different directions. It has become one of the big stories of the season. It's just, it's a lot of ugliness.
Yeah. It seems unlikely that like his star running back, Zeke Elliott, that Jerry Jones is going to be backing down from this fight with right. the NFL at this point. And certainly the development on Wednesday, or really the conclusion of at least this part of the story, probably just opens up the doors further for this ongoing battle between Roger Goodell and Jerry Jones, and where the rest of the owners kind of fall in between. So,
yep.
Let's stick with the Cowboys, Eric. Like we do every week, we'll move on to the big games of the weekend. And the Eagles come off bye, and the Cowboys come off a loss, of course, in their first game without Zeke Elliott. They also missed Tyron Smith desperately. They missed Sean Lee badly after he left that game early.
Yep.
But what do you think? I mean, this has become a must-win for the Cowboys, certainly if they wanted to have any hope in the NFC East, and that hope appears fleeting. But even bigger picture, I mean, the Cowboys, their backs are against the wall all of a sudden if they're going to stick in this much-improved conference's wildcard race.
Yep. Eagles, with a win, go to 9-1, and perhaps more importantly to the point you just made, was 4-0 in the division.
Yep.
That's, you know, I'm not saying it's wrapped up, but it's all but wrapped up if they win that. You know, it just is lining up pretty nicely for the Eagles if they can get this win. They're coming off a bye. They're well-rested. They've got Brandon Graham going against whoever's going to be at left tackle. And, I mean, we could actually sort of make the argument that Sean Lee and Tyron Smith are perhaps even higher on the list than Ezekiel Elliott of most important Cowboys. When those guys aren't out there, the offense and defense, respectively, are just not the same units. And Smith, we saw it firsthand with all the sacks they gave up to Adrian Claiborne, but the run game, too, Sean Lee, his presence, no question, it makes a huge impact there. So, yeah, the Eagles have to come in flying high, feeling confident. Big Sunday night game in Dallas. But, you know, they can knock them down and maybe out of this race.
Yeah, it would be fascinating to see, really stunning to see, just the Cowboys kind of fall from grace last year. And the Sean Lee point is huge. The two games he missed this season were the defense's two worst performances, at least in terms of rushing yards allowed. Now you've got Jay Ajayi and LeGarrette Blount. I know fantasy owners are intrigued to see what that mix looks like coming out of the bye. They should have a healthy Zach Ertz back. And you mentioned that Eagles defensive front that seems to be flying under the radar in all of this, just because Carson Wentz has been so great, and that offense has kind of been largely the story, right?
Yeah, I mean, Wentz is terrific. I fear for our country's well-being if he ever does have a bad game, though. You know, like, there's been so much hype. I really worry about the mental, wellness of the good folks in our country. But, no, he's been terrific, and you know, they've designed the offense around his strengths. They haven't missed Jason Peters. They added Jay Ajayi. You know, we've talked about how, you know, Alshon Jeffrey has looked more comfortable, you know, and just their tight end has become a more important position. It's fun to watch them kind of develop that identity. But, oh, by the way, they've got a pressure defense, and maybe they get Ronald Darby back. We don't know his stat. I don't think we know his stat.
I think he's on track to play.
Right.
It's certainly trending in that direction,
yep.
And that obviously only accentuates this pressure defense and the, you know, the options that Jim Schwartz has. So,
yep. I'm glad, yeah. I didn't write about it, though, because I had heard early in the week that they were maybe kind of pumping the brakes on him a little bit. But then when he practiced fully the other day, I thought, well, I'm glad I didn't put that out there that he might not be able to play Sunday. But, yeah, so that's a great addition for them.
And we'll see. We're taping here on Thursday, so we're still not entirely yep. sure. But I thought the last report I had read was that Darby was on track to play. Eric, you mentioned something that stuck out to me, though. If the Eagles have managed to move on without Jason Peters and not skipping a beat, how much of that Adrian Claiborne demolition does Jason Garrett have to own? I mean, did he struggle to adjust to account for the loss of Tyron Smith, as we've seen others have to do when you lose a franchise left tackle?
Yeah, we don't talk about announcers very often, but the one part of that game that I watched pretty closely was when Troy Aikman kind of said, hey, if it's me and I'm on the coaching staff, I'll let somebody else beat me before Adrian Claiborne gets that many sacks. You know, almost sort of hinting that
yeah.
you haven't made any adjustments and you have not helped your guy out, who's already a second string left tackle and a huge drop from Smith. So, you know, the point being, if somebody else is going to get a sack, fine, so be it. We're just not, you know, we don't have the strength up front, that kind of thing. But to just let them kind of go on an island out there and get beat like they were, you know, there's a coaching element for I've always appreciated Jason Garrett's sort of big vision and professionalism, and he wants to sort of be this Coach K-like figure and, you know, a business-like approach to the whole operation. But, you know, in-game adjustments are a huge part of the deal, and that was obviously a big one that they missed.
Yeah, you know, Adrian Claiborne, former first-round player, he's been underrated. I mean, he obviously it didn't work out in Tampa, and he was allowed to leave, and the numbers don't jump out, at least not before Sunday. But for a guy to rack up, I think, like 20% of his career sacks.
21.2,
thank you.
Sorry,
a franchise record. You'd think you maybe would want to make some changes, and we didn't see it from the Cowboys. It almost felt like a perfect storm. Dak's first time out without Zeke, but, oh, yeah, you also are missing Tyron Smith, and Sean Lee also goes down in-game, so it was a lot to overcome. But that'll be an interesting game, and I know we will embrace having a few to discuss. I'm just going to cut right to the chase. The other one that I absolutely cannot wait for, Eric, the first place Rams head to the first place Vikings. Our publisher and editor, Pro Football Weekly, Hub Arkus, just on our TV show now, did make a pretty good point. Both of these teams kind of looking for a signature win. The Rams, I believe, won in Dallas, and the Vikings, of course, stomped New Orleans to open the season. But in recent weeks, it's been it's been easier sledding. Not necessarily how they got there. The Vikings had to survive Washington, but just in terms of the competition, this is an awesome measuring stick for both clubs.
Yeah, I mean, if you want to look at the Rams' point differential, I think they lead the NFL in that category. It's super impressive. They whipped the Colts week one. You know, they put up some big point totals. They went into Dallas, as you said. I think they blanked the Cardinals 33-0 or something like that. I'm trying to think of
the Jaguars, they stomped. The Niners, Giants. They stomped. The Jaguars is a signature win, I would say. But the offense struggled in that game. Is actually the special teams that picked up the slack.
Yeah.
I was so impressed because that was almost a sign of a young team maturing. When the offense isn't rolling, we can get the other elements going here.
Yep. Some of their big wins on the road, too. I mean, yep. So it's good. It's been good to watch that. But you're right. I mean, I think especially with, week one – feeling like it was 9 months ago, too, for the Vikings.
Yep.
I mean, that was a big win at the time. Pretty good statement victory. And now that we know the Saints are a better team, okay, that means a little something more. But you're right. I think there's something to be said. I did like the way the Vikings handled themselves in the Monday night game, even though it was Trubisky's first start. Bradford looked terrible. They weren't, sort of in sync early. It looked like Trubisky had some room to throw at one point. Keenum came off the bench. So they've had some games that, may not look good in terms of the opponent, but dealing with the atmosphere and the situation, they handle themselves well, and they're in a couple other spots.
Yeah, it's a good call. We were both in the press box for that game and certainly had our questions about why Sam Bradford was ever on the field in the first place. But nonetheless, the adversity that they overcame in that game, Keenum played really well in the second half, and then who showed up? Oh, yeah, the Vikings' big-time players, Everson Griffin, with some really impactful rushes down the stretch, and Harrison Smith, their soon-to-be all-pro safety with the game-sealing pick. So just playmakers everywhere, Eric. But I'm curious, what a weird week for Case Keenum this must be, right? So it looks like he's going to have the game of his NFL life Sunday in Washington, 3 touchdowns before halftime,
right?
4 touchdowns after the first series of the second half. And then the wheels came off a little bit, two late interceptions that really kind of threatened the Vikings' chances there for a while. So he survives the game. He survives another week of Teddy Bridgewater now being active, but still going to be the number two. And now his old pals, the Rams, and the number one overall pick who he started over to begin last season, comes to town. There's going to be so much going on in Case Keenum's head, and whether good or bad, he's got to find a way to focus on the task at hand.
I thought you set that up perfectly, because obviously no one entered the season feeling that he was going to play any sort of significant impact on this, this team. There were people saying, hey, Colin Kaepernick's better. Why did they even sign this guy, et cetera? Now he finds himself in the thick of this playoff race with a good team behind him that doesn't have a lead running back but has other solutions out there, and all those things you just mentioned. He's facing his old team. He's coming off kind of a miserable second half there, at least after a certain point. So, those things are all true. When I look at the 30 points Washington scored, we know that two of those touchdowns were directly as a result because of the mistakes there in the second half. So, other than that, I mean, the Vikings hadn't allowed more than 17 points since week two. It's incredible.
Case Keenum has been a great story, maybe not getting quite the level of attention it should, actually, but you know, he's not maybe your typical kind of Hollywood starring actor. So, and then what about on the Rams side of things, Eric? I know we're both big Wade Phillips fans, and I stumbled upon a stat in the Rams' four-game winning streak. They've allowed, I believe, a combined 41 points. The defense has started to resemble a shutdown group. Do you think Wade's taking any joy in what's going on with that Broncos club that he wasn't invited return to, and what's going on with that defense over the past couple weeks?
Well, he got to celebrate the big win in Dallas. His defense was shredded in the first half, made some plays in the second. It was really kind of the start of that run where they've been really good defensively and great offensively. So, yeah, I know how much, if you watch the post-game celebration of that Dallas game, you know, Sean McVay, here's your game ball, coach, and the players rallied around him. First of all, Wade's like a big teddy bear. Everyone loves him, you know, but he's also a defensive genius as well. So I think if that game, now granted, he was the head coach and you know, for a longer stretch than he was in Denver, but, you know, he won his first Super Bowl in Denver. You know, he had a close relationship with some of those guys, including Von Miller. And yeah, I think there's absolutely a little bit of Schadenfreude going on here where he's turned around a unit that was giving up 27, 30, 39 points, whatever it was. And now, in the last, like you said, what was it, 4 or 5 games that they've been
four
excellent.
In a row. Yep.
Just, I don't know how you don't consider the Rams a contender, but Vikings, Saints, Eagles in a couple weeks after that. Seahawks still competitors. I mean, they've got some tough games.
It's death, taxes, and overnight defensive turnarounds under Wade Phillips.
Right.
It's amazing.
He's
and that's
crazy.
Not to say that he didn't inherit a lot of talent and that the Rams' defense was their problem last season. Obviously, it wasn't, but the statistics are quite impressive, and this is going to be a lot of fun. I can't wait to watch this one. A couple more interesting ones on the slate. We got a couple more minutes on the Pro Football Weekly podcast. He's Eric. I am Arthur. Check us out on iTunes. Subscribe, rating, review, all that great stuff. And big thanks to Dan Mott, our producer, and to Loot Crate, our awesome sponsor. Eric, what jumps out? I think that the Patriots and Raiders getting ready to Fiesta in Mexico City is interesting. Derek Carr and the Raiders overcame themselves last year against Houston. I don't know if you remember that one, but there was myriad drops in that game, all kinds of ugly play, but the Raiders did survive in a quote-unquote home game, I believe it was. Mm-hmm. Now they're coming off the bye. The Patriots have a 12-game road winning streak. They just absolutely demolished Denver in arguably their most complete performance of the season. What jumps out to you about this one?
Yeah, I mean, first of all, I love Mexico City. I have family in Mexico, or they just actually moved to the United States, but I always love that city. I don't know if it was a Stadium Azteca, is that where they're playing? You know, there's been some security concerns and this and that, and some questions about the environmental conditions there, but let's hope those aren't issues.
Right.
Oakland's bye. You know, they spent some time at least sort of figuring out that they can still score points. I don't know if it keeps up against the Patriots defense that will give up its share yards, but it's clamped down a little bit more. I wish I could feel that Marshawn Lynch was going to be a big part of this team. He's just a tone setter if he's right. So, you know, the way to beat New England, I think, is to pound him up the middle and then kind of attack the edges. They give you those cover two holes a little bit. What did John Gruden call it? The turkey hole, right? Yeah, the turkey hole. And I believe Dowell Loggins, the Bears offensive coordinator, had his own phrase, honey hole, which I don't know. That's a little more PG-13 or something like that. But, I just feel like Oakland's non-playmaking secondary has no shot of slowing down Tom Brady. None. I mean, like, they haven't made a pick all year. They don't stop people. I don't know. Unless Khalil Mack just goes, you know, hog wild. I can't see that defense stopping them very much.
So you're saying it's almost like they needed Gary and Conley and Obi Melifonwu to make contributors as rookies. They put Conley, the first rounder, on IR this week. Melifonwu, I don't believe has barely gotten on the field, hasn't made an impact. So, I think we kind of view this one the same way. I haven't believed in the Raiders defense, even despite all the apparent upgrades in the offseason, and I certainly still don't now. So, it does feel like it should be a Marshawn Lynch game, but there have been a few others where we've said that, and it hasn't quite happened. So I don't even know if this one is really competitive. This one maybe gets ugly. They're going to need Derek Carr. Likely the Raiders are to put him on his back, and he does that so frequently.
Yep. Yeah, and no, I just You know, and again, these are my questions that I had, even dating back to last year. A lot of close wins, like you mentioned, the Mexico City game. I felt like there were a lot of games where they were given some opportunities to win games. Now, maybe they got aggressive and stole a few, that sort of thing. But I just felt like their win total was out of whack with where they were talent-wise and the holes they had defensively. Yep. They just... I mean, honestly, like, what can I wager on Tom Brady not throwing a pick this week? I know the odds will not favor me at all, but I'm willing to take that because I would be stunned unless there's some sort of fluky play. I just don't see any kind of turnovers created.
Well, and me, because I just think the NFL is so out of whack. I'm predicting 3 Raiders interceptions, and I'm predicting that the Giants' streak of allowing opposing tight ends to score touchdowns ends this week versus Travis Kelce.
How funny is that? That is one of the great, like, you know, it was one of those things that people started talking about, like, in week 3 or 4. Oh, Giants give up a lot of yards to tight ends. It has been every, well, you know, because you do a lot of fantasy stuff, every single week, right?
10 in a row, yeah. Yes.
Touchdown, or isn't there a certain benchmark for yardage, too? Like,
probably that, yeah. Too. But they've allowed 10 touchdowns on the season. I believe that means 1 in every single game, and some lucky guy got 2 on them. So, I just realized I want to talk Falcons-Seahawks. We've only got a couple minutes left on the PFW podcast. But, Eric, I do need to get your take and insert my own on the Buffalo situation. Obviously, a big quarterback shakeup despite Sean McDermott's team at 5-4 and clinging to that final wild card spot in the AFC. Did Tyrod Taylor get a raw deal? Does Nate Peterman have a chance to inject life into this offense? What do you make of that situation?
Yeah, I guess if you'd have told me at some point early in the season that, you know, even with the Bills winning, that Tyrod was going to get benched at some point for Peterman, I wouldn't have been shocked at all.
Right.
That was just the feeling I got, that they sort of they went with him and kind of sort of tailored the offense to suit him a little bit, but that long-term wise, they had their eyes elsewhere. They have all these draft picks, war chests full of them. They kind of like Peterman. You know, Brandon Bean said, he said, even though we liked Peterman coming out, we were surprised how good he was when we first saw him in our camp and that sort of thing. So, you know, he's kind of felt like they had one eye elsewhere.
I was surprised he lasted till the 5th round. I'm not saying he's going to be the next Tom Brady, but I thought that was a value where they got him.
Yep. You know who I thought was going to like him if they didn't get a quarterback high? It was the Bears. They had him at the Senior Bowl.
Sure.
He seemed to kind of fit some of the things they wanted to do. And so I thought, yeah, he could be like a late 2nd, early 3rd round pick. That was kind of my guess.
We're on the same page relative to the – it's not a surprise because Sean McDermott kind of gave the non-endorsements ever since he arrived with Tyrod. They restructured the deal.
Right.
It was a new regime, but it was the same old tepid endorsements of Tyrod Taylor. Right,
yeah,
it was the
point.
Same way that their predecessors there handled Doug Whaley handled things too. So, but do you think that he does give them life, or how do you think the rest of the league will view Tyrod too? So, 2 more parts to this question because now he's going to enter free agency along with Kirk Cousins, maybe Drew Brees. No, it's not going to be Drew Brees, but there are going to be some interesting guys out there.
Yeah, for sure, Kirk Cousins or whoever, and including him and others. Yeah, I mean, to me, obviously, the timing of this move, first of all, is a little odd because, you're facing a good Chargers pass rush.
Yep.
That's tough for a rookie quarterback to step in against. 2 straight road games. You got the Patriots after that. Like, this is technically one of the toughest stretches of their
Chiefs
season.
Chiefs, too, right?
Yep. Chiefs are in there. Yeah, so Chiefs next week and New England after that. They're 5-4, right? They're in this race. You know, you think... Boy, it's not like – I mean, I know Tyrod didn't play well Sunday, but technically it's not like he's losing games for him because they've given up 81 points the last 2 games. The defense has been terrible, and it was bad in the Tampa Bay game, and it was bad in other times. So, I guess the timing is the biggest thing. As far as how the league will view Tyrod, I know there are coaches out there who think they can work with him and that this won't dismay them. If anything, they're excited because they think, hey, now he's going to be available – you know, whether it's a team like Denver or San Francisco or whoever that wants to bring him in, and you know, maybe not San Francisco, they got Jimmy, but you know, Denver's an option. I would say that's a team that, and the irony is that Denver and Buffalo talked about a quarterback trade in the offseason for Trevor Siemian. They actually discussed that deal, so I don't know if that's out there or not, but you know, something along those lines could happen.
We didn't see the Bills. I feel like it was a little rigid, which is a little strange because Rick Dennison, of course, had the previous rapport with Tyrod from Baltimore, but you didn't see really that offense get maximized for Tyrod's running ability, I didn't think. And I know a lot of NFL people say he's limited. He's a one-read guy. Mm-hmm. That read better be there. He's going to take off.
Yeah.
But still, I mean, it's a dynamic trait that I don't know if it was fully utilized or not.
Yeah.
And then just to kind of double down on what you said about the options, optics of this. It reminded me of Greg Roman getting fired last year in week two after they had just let up, I think, almost 40 points to the Jets, and Rex's defense got ripped, and then they decide that Greg Roman, the offensive coordinator, is the problem. It kind of felt like that because the Saints just had an epic rushing performance on Sean McDermott's defense, the second bad one in a row. Tyrod was horrible, too. 9-for-18, 54 yards and an interception, but it kind of created, I think, with Bills fans, certainly with Tyrod supporters, kind of, oh, he's going to be the scapegoat in this thing. Kind of hard to not view it that way, almost.
Yeah, I mean,
I like Sean McDermott, and I like Nate Peterman, too. I'm not saying this can't work. Just, again, the timing was very, very
odd. No, and right, McDermott, for me, the biggest issues for him with me has been on game day.
Yes.
Everything, you know, he seems like he has his team ready to go most weeks, last week an exception. That third quarter drive, 10 plays, 10 rushes, 94 yards. I've never seen anything quite like it. It was insane. But, yeah, so now McDermott now has to answer for his defense. He's a defensive guy. And he has to hope that his rookie quarterback doesn't play poorly. So he just added to his plate. Now, the people suggesting that this move was racially, you know, oh my gosh,
please.
Kamara. I just can't even, I don't know why people have to go there with that. There's nothing to it. That is absolutely not the case. Of all people, Sean McDermott, I really don't believe is going down that road. So
yeah.
I just believe this is a coaching staff that didn't believe in him. And was going to just make a switch at some point anyway.
We'll see. You're absolutely right about throwing him into the deep end. Up first in a cross-country trip is Joey Bosa and Melvin Ingram, and they can definitely make for a long day for any quarterback, and we'll see how Peterman handles it. It'll be interesting. Eric, I got one more game I want to discuss about 5 minutes or less on the Pro Football Weekly podcast. Thanks again for being with us again this week, listeners. And we've got another good, well, what I think should be a good primetime game, and the Seahawks without Richard Sherman, Eric, we have never discussed this since 2011, since Richard Sherman began blazing a Hall of Fame path, I believe, or likely, if he's able to sustain it for a couple more years, if he comes back from the ruptured Achilles as the same corner. But what do you think about the Legion of Boom now without its boisterous leader?
Yeah, and you made a great point. I don't remember if it was right after the injury happened or when exactly it was, about how look at the Earl Thomas effect last year and how much this defense missed him. Now, to me, maybe Thomas covers a little more ground and has a little more of a fingerprint on the defense.
Sort of sideline to sideline. Richard Sherman, if there's any knock on him, he shuts down one side of the field. At least that's what they say. Yeah.
And Julio Jones got the better of him a couple years ago. And, you know, so there's, you know, it's not like, you know, Jones couldn't have done well against him had he been healthy. But you're right. I mean, it's just now you're down to
they got the rookie they like a lot.
Shaquille Griffin.
Shaquille Griffin, who has exceeded expectations. Then they signed Byron Maxwell this week.
Jeremy Lane's back.
Yeah, fortuitous, right? Failed physical. Yep.
They traded for Justin Coleman in August.
He's been inside corner, I think.
Nico Thorpe, I guess, is the other guy who's been playing. He probably would be the odd man out, I guess, if Maxwell's ready to go. So, yeah, it just, you know, you have some familiar names, obviously, but it's maybe not the same, you know, remotely same, especially if Thomas is a little banged up too. He's probably
missed the past two games. Yep. Cam Chancellor got a stinger in that game last Thursday. At least they had a couple extra days to try and recover.
You saw them draft all those DBs this year. This is why, because all these guys have been banged up, and the depth that was there 2 years ago isn't there anymore.
Is this the beginning of the end?
Yes.
I mean, is that too? You really think it could be? We got Russell Wilson though in his prime. Is it more that they need to find a way to restructure the identity of this team? I mean, Pete Carroll's one of the best coaches in the business. Yep. I don't know if I can say it's the beginning of the end.
No, not for the team. I meant for the
of this.
Of boom.
Okay. Yeah. Yes. All right.
Because they've put more of an emphasis now on the front seven. You know, they trade for Sheldon Richardson. They you know, they draft Malik McDowell. They Nazaire Jones has been great. He was a third-round pick, I think, or fourth, you know, Frank Clark. They've invested multiple picks up front.
Yeah.
They have this great linebacking core, and then they dip a little deeper in the second level of the drafts, second, third, fourth-rounders, fifth-rounders, in the secondary. So, yeah, there's been more of an emphasis up front.
It's interesting. Remember, Atlanta went into Seattle last year. I think it was like in October.
Yeah,
and it was a great game, and they escaped with the win. But there was Seattle escaped with the win at home, but there was the controversial non-call on the final drive. Richard Sherman holding Julio, and he got away with it. And, again, of course, we won't see Sherman in this one, but Julio had, like, I think almost 150 receiving in that game, much of it versus Sherman in the second half. So that'll be fascinating. And then, of course, we'll just finish here, Eric. The other side of it is Atlanta, and you mentioned on our TV show, interestingly, after Devonta Freeman went down, that might have been as close to the Super Bowl Falcons offense as we've seen, maybe with the exception of that Packers blowout early in the year.
Yeah, I was shocked because Coleman, you know, was a non-factor in the loss of the Patriots. I was at that game, and you know, I had like five or six touches, and we asked, you know, Dan Quinn about it after the game. Was Tevin hurt? Is he, you know? Mm-hmm. And he said, no, it was just sort of the way the game went. And I thought, boy, you know, when Coleman had those complimentary runs last year, that was they just had waves of talent rolling at you, and they could do so much with him. But like, you know, as I said, Freeman out. I'm not blaming him, but it was almost like the guessing game was gone. You know, they didn't have to worry about who we give it to in what situation. We got one option. So Coleman's going to be the workhorse in this game, and I think he'll be busy. He'll do a lot.
Yeah, it's going to be fascinating. Obviously, it's a tough second, you know, ever feature role game for Tevin Coleman going to Seattle in that vaunted Seahawks run defense, but it hasn't been quite as dominant this year as we've seen consistently for the past four or five. And then just, you know, defensively, we'll see if Adrian Claiborne can pick up where he left off. It'll be a little tougher, I think, against Dwayne Brown, who should be good to go in this one,
yes,
than it was Chaz Green last week.
Yeah.
But the Falcons D may be starting to potentially kind of find what it had been missing as well. So this will be a fun one on Monday night, guys. We hope you enjoy. That's going to do it for this week's Pro Football Weekly podcast. One more round of thank yous to our producer, Dan Mott, our sponsor, Loot Crate. For Eric, I am Arthur, and the biggest thank you, of course, goes to you guys. Make sure you head back next week for our Week 12 preview on the Pro Football Weekly podcast.
See you later.